Well, ladies and gentlemen, took a minute, but we back in full effect. Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Hicks, here. We're recording this on Tuesday night, April the 8th. A lot we want to get into this evening. Thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it, as always. Big things been happening in the world of sports and hip-hop music, as usual. I mean, I guess that's not to be unexpected. Or I guess I should say that is to be expected. Just coming off of national championship game last night. We're going to get into that. Also, we're going to debut a new segment here on the podcast later on. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Jay-Z Drake situation that took place over the course of the last couple of weeks. And I'm going to touch on the DeSean Jackson situation with the Philadelphia Eagles. We haven't been on a podcast in a while. It's been about almost three weeks since we've done a podcast, and there's reasons for that. I'm going to get into all that and more. But in that time frame, we saw DeSean Jackson get let go by the Philadelphia Eagles, and there was a lot of controversy surrounding that decision. So I wanted to touch on that. And I wanted to touch on Richard Sherman, who kind of came to DeSean Jackson's defense. But we'll get into all that in a little bit. As usual, I want to shout out the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. Please stop by and check us out if you have not done so. We appreciate all of our new Twitter followers. We're on Twitter at HHSReport. Received quite a few new followers here of late, so thank you very much. We appreciate that. Definitely appreciate anybody who stopped by the website and showed us some love. Anybody that's read one single sentence, one single word that was written there, we greatly appreciate that. Want to send a quick shout out, congratulatory shout out to my man, Anthony Houston, former podcast guest, one of my best friends in the whole world. He just had a baby boy named Timothy back on April 1st. So this podcast is dedicated to you, Timothy, and to the whole Houston family, Susie and Anthony. We love you guys here. And I just wanted to say congratulations on the new bundle of joy. And if that weren't enough, we did have some major news with the podcast going back to last week. We are now available on iTunes. Woo! Yes, major news. So the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast now on iTunes, so you can listen to us on the go. That's all you wanted in this life, right? Which is to hear me rambling in your earlobes all day long. You know what I'm saying? And now you can do that. You don't have to be tied down to a computer. You can plug me into your mobile device and, you know, you're on the go and you still got Hip Hop Sports Report podcast playing in your ears, you know? So thank you. Shout out to my man, Cray Allred. Very good guy. He actually helped out a lot with getting me set up there. And I really do appreciate that. You can follow him on Twitter at Cray Allred, CrayAllred. He is actually going to be, I think he's in the preliminary stages of launching his own hip-hop podcast, and I've heard a couple of episodes so far, so it's really good stuff. I don't know if he's actually gotten it off the ground yet, at least to the point that he wants it, so he's going to debut it for the public, but from what I've heard to this point, it's very good stuff, and so I hope he keeps it up. Shout out to Cray. Thank you very much for helping us get on iTunes. And then I got to plug my man Anthony's Twitter as well, because I forgot to do that. Anthony Houston, please follow him at AKHouston, H-U-E-S-T. He has his own blog called Houston Life Chronicles. Really funny and insightful stuff on that blog as well. And again, another shout out to my brother, who has been on the podcast before. He's just joined the Twitter universe, or the Twitterverse as it's known. So let's all welcome him into 2014, right? He's a little late, but he's not, you know, he's tardy to the party, but he's still there. Better late than never, right? So his name is Kenneth Hicks, at Author K Hicks. Please check him out as well. He's a really talented and funny guy, and really good at a really strong writer, and has a lot of great ideas and a lot of unique thoughts and opinions about sports, hip hop music, and everything in between. So please check him out as well. I'm gonna try to keep the voice down a little bit because I do have the missus in the other room. My lady is in class right now. She's taking some kind of online class at home, but it's like a webinar thing, so she has to she's like plugged into the computer and there's people talking to her off, and they're boring her to tears, I think. But she was a sport and decided to go in the other room so I could podcast in this room with you guys. So we'll try to keep our voices down. Let's start with last night's championship game, y'all. The March Madness concluded last night. UConn Huskies, congratulations to UConn. They are the men's national champions for Division I basketball. Very impressive stuff last night. They actually led wire to wire, which is something that you would not have expected from them, given how I think most people perceive that game is going to go. Kentucky was actually a 2-point favorite, I think, at tip-off, if I'm not mistaken. UConn was solid, man. They were solid from start to finish, and even when they faltered, they never gave up the lead, and that's kind of one of my personal rules about basketball that I've always maintained, is that when a team falls behind for a significant length of time during a basketball game and they're fighting to get back into the game and they're fighting to get back and they're fighting to get back, they've got to get the lead at some point, y'all. They have to take the lead just for the psychological bump that it gives you, the psychological edge that it gives the team that's trying to come back. They need to see the scoreboard in their favor just for 1 second. Even if Kentucky would have taken the lead, and they had a couple shots. I remember Harrison missed a corner three that would have been huge, that would have put him in front late in the game. Aaron Harrison, that is. But even if you get the lead, and say Harrison makes that shot, and UConn goes down, and they score again, and they take the lead back, that's fine. Just that one little, you know, that one period of 30 seconds down the floor where UConn has to sweat it out for a second and say, okay, now we're down. Now we coughed up that big lead. What are we going to do? Because a lot of times, teams can't handle that pressure so well once they've had this big lead all game long, and then they screwed it up and pissed it away. Now they're playing from behind. Psychologically, that can have it can be as much of a disadvantage to the team that was in front as it can be an advantage to a team that was trailing. So I think that Kentucky really needed to just get over that hump one good time. And obviously, of course, okay, they needed to get the lead at some point in order for them to win the game. I get that. But what I mean is just sometime in that comeback process, they were down, you know, 15 points early on. They cut it to 6 at halftime, I think, and they got it down to 1 point on several different occasions in the second half. They needed to get that lead at some point, and they just couldn't do it, y'all. And you know what? Free throws played a big role in that. But I feel like they may have won the game, actually, if they would have gotten the lead at some point during that process. Even if they would have coughed it right back up to UConn, I think the psychological advantage might have been enough to get them over the top. But again, it was the free throws that really, I felt like, did Kentucky in. Kentucky missed at least 10 free throws in that game. I don't even remember them making a free throw in the second half. I don't even know if you can chalk that up to them being a young team, because I don't think they've been a particularly strong free throw shooting team all season, so them being young and falling victim to the pressure of the spotlight might not have necessarily had anything to do with it. But in any case, it was still a fantastic run for Kentucky. They made it further than anybody expected. So you got to give them credit. You got to give Coach Cal credit. You can't jump on John Calipari as this guy that just can recruit his behind off but can't coach, even though he's gotten to the big game, I think, 3 times now, and is 1-2 in those 3 games. Even still, the fact that you can even get a team to 3 national championship games at 2 different schools in about a 5 or 6 year span, it's really impressive. And to cut down the nets once, it's really impressive stuff. So there's no better recruiter in the business than Cal, and he's definitely one of the top coaches. He deserves to be praised, as does Kevin Ollie. Kevin Ollie was a journeyman NBA player, and nobody really anticipated he was going to do anything like this, at least not this soon, with UConn. UConn coming off those sanctions and everything, Jim Calhoun kind of left the burning building, and Kevin Ollie was left to sift through the debris, and then Kemba leaves, and then all these guys, you know, leave, and he's left to kind of rebuild his program, and he did it on the fly, and here we are a couple years later, they're back in the title game, and they're winning it. Shabazz Napier was outstanding. He was the most outstanding player of the Final Four, and he deserved it. He was the best player in the tournament. If you have the best player in the tournament, then chances are you're going to go pretty far, and that's exactly what it was, man. Shabazz was a senior. That senior leadership came in handy, and he owned the moment. He owned the moment. He didn't shy away from it. He came out blazing, both guns blazing, double barrel, you know what I mean? I think he had 15 in the first half, something like that, and and he kept it up, and he came back in. Kevin Ollie, I thought, did a great job of managing his breaks in the second half, got him a little breather in between the timeouts. You know, there was an official timeout that was coming up, so he got him some extra breathing time just before that, got him a little bit of time after that. He comes back in, immediately knocks down a big jump shot for UConn. He was fantastic, y'all. I mean, Shabazz was fantastic. Definitely, I didn't hear anybody talking about NBA for Shabazz Napier coming into the season or during the season for that matter. But I think he's definitely helped his draft stock quite a bit, and he deserves to be praised, as is the entire Huskies team. They were great, and you got to look at this program. I think UConn kind of slips through the cracks when people talk about the best programs in college. As far as college basketball is concerned, men's college basketball, UConn seems to get overlooked, I think. Well, you look at it now, since 1999, they've won 4 championships. I mean, they won, I think 99 was the first one, I believe, that was the Richard Hamilton, Khalid El-Amin team. Although I always thought Khalid El-Amin was a bum, and I knew he was going to be a bum in the NBA, but that's beside the point. But they had that team. Then in 04, they had the Emeka Okafor, Ben Gordon team. Then just a couple years ago, they had the Kemba Walker team. And now they have this Shabazz Napier, Ryan Boatwright team. And so they keep finding a way. They're not as sexy, I think, as a lot of these other schools. Obviously, Kentucky's a much sexier kind of program, the way they go in and recruit these one-and-done kids. And obviously, Duke has all the cachet and the history and everything like that. Carolina's the same way. UCLA has been up and down recently, but nobody, I don't think, has any more history than them, except for maybe Kentucky. But here we are in UConn, like I said, since 99, has won 4 titles. I don't think anybody else has matched that. So really outstanding work, and congratulations to the kids up in Stores. Everybody except for R.A. Derrick. R.A. Derrick is the lamest cat ever. If you don't know who he is, go ahead and Google that lame-o. But anyways, yeah, man, fantastic game. I thought the free throw shooting obviously was the difference. And in the end, what we saw here, and not to toot my own horn too much, because, you know, I picked Florida to go all the way on our last podcast at the start of the tournament. And they went pretty far, but they didn't win. And so I'm not trying to give myself the greatest pat on the back, because I definitely did not have UConn or Kentucky in the Final Four. I do think Iowa State probably would have beaten UConn had George Niang not gotten hurt for Iowa State. But the fact that he went down, that kind of changed things in that entire region, I felt like, because I really thought Iowa State was the best team going in. But with that being said, you look at, we had an 8 seed versus a 7 seed. That we've never had 2 higher seeds in a championship game before. And this is exactly what I was talking about going back about a month at the beginning of March when we wrote an article on hiphopsportsreport.com and stating that you don't know who's going to win the NBA, or excuse me, you don't know who's going to win the NCAA championship this year. You don't. So everybody can fill out their bracket. Everybody can have fun filling out their bracket and enjoy that process and enjoy the culture that's part of the culture that's become. But don't get pissed when your bracket goes up in smoke right out the gate, because this year was as wide open as any year. I said that in that article. I said the same thing on our last podcast. I said this year was not to be predicted. You couldn't do it. There were too many teams shuffling up at about the top of the rankings all season long. Even the very best teams like Wichita State was undefeated all year, but they were suspect. Florida was very good, but they still kind of lacked that something, you know. And a lot of people picked them, myself included, but they still kind of lacked that something, and it was hard to put your finger on. But it was just too difficult to predict a champion this year. It just couldn't be done. And so, at least from that standpoint, I was proven correct, because again, an 8 and a 7 seed is unprecedented in the NCAA tournament finals, in the men's finals. And even though Kentucky and UConn are 2 powerhouse programs, nobody had them in the championship game. Nobody even had them in the Final Four, y'all. You know, and if you did, you know, hats off to you. I think I saw a stat, though, that said of the 11 million ESPN tournament challenge brackets that were submitted, I believe 0.3% of the 11 million had UConn winning the championship. So, if only 0.3 had UConn winning the whole thing, how many actually had them in the Final Four? 1%? Less than 1%? And they were the lower of the two seeds that were in it. So it just goes to show you that there was too much parity in college basketball this year. It just could not be predicted. And anybody that act like they knew what they were talking about, they deserve to get slapped in the mouth. And all those guys on television and, you know, they that's their job. They have to make those predictions and they have to do their best to make the right call. So I'm not going to kill them for that. And I got it wrong, too. So it's not like I'm much better. But I can't get over just everybody on ESPN picking Michigan State. And ESPN's not the only people I'm trying to come down on. But I just can't get over the fact that everybody picked Michigan State on Selection Sunday. And it's like, really? There's no way Michigan State's going to win if everybody's picking them. It's this isn't that year, and they aren't that team. And they went deep, but it just wasn't enough, man. And this year was just up for grabs, and anybody could have had a shot at it. We had Andy Roberts on the podcast last week. He said anybody that's a 12 seed or lower pretty much had a legitimate shot at winning. And he was right. I mean, that's just what we saw. So again, shout out to UConn and Kevin Ollie and the crew there. And hats off to Kentucky on a fantastic season as well. And I know a lot of Kentucky fans were disappointed. A lot of Lexington people were pretty salty about the outcome of the game. And then there was Drake. So Drizzy, right? Drizzy Drake, the Toronto MC, he's been connected with the Kentucky program for the last couple of years now. I'm not even sure how it started, to be quite honest with you. Maybe he got in good with, I think he was tight with Boogie Cousins and John Wall or something like that. And next thing you know, he's tight with Cal and he's going to the practices and he's performing at their scrimmages before the season and all this other stuff, man. I don't really know how it went down, but he seems to have been down with the program for at least a few years. He's not a total bandwagon hopper like Lil Wayne is, his label mate, but Drake, you know, after Kentucky, Harrison hit the big shot against Wisconsin and put them in the championship game. And after the game, Drake is in the locker room for some reason. And it's like, oh, okay, so this is happening. Drake is going to give them a post-game speech. And I saw some video of it through Kentucky's website. I think they posted it on YouTube. It was a pretty lame speech, but that's okay. You know, that's not really Drake's MO. He's a rapper and an actor, I guess. But at any rate, so Drake's part of the program. And so when Kentucky lost, there's all these photos of Drake popping up online, the one where he's just like standing in the crowd looking like he's looking down at a casket with his boy in it. That's kind of how he was standing there, like he just witnessed his boy fall in the heat of the battle. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of what it was. But that was really funny, I thought. But Drake has obviously been a topic of much discussion, as usual. He typically is. Drake got into it with Jay-Z recently. A few months back, for those of you who don't know the situation, a few months back, Drake went, I think he did an interview with Rolling Stone, and he basically said, I don't know how Jay-Z even came up, but they interview him, and Drake says that Jay-Z, who's constantly rapping about art all of a sudden, is really lame, and he thought that it was just corny, the fact that he was constantly rapping about that stuff. Now, and you remember Jay-Z did a song on his last album, the Magna Carta Holy Grail album, where he talks about Picasso, baby, right? And that whole song is about art. And he's been talking about Basquiat paintings for about the last 3 years. And now you're hearing other rappers rap about Basquiat when nobody was doing it before Jay was. And so, I mean, that's par for the course, but... So Drake comes along and he says, you know what, this is corny, yo, stop rapping about art. And Jay-Z then responded to that on a song on the We Made It remix, which I guess was a remix to the remix, because Soulja Boy originally made that song. Drake hopped on it and then he made that song popular, pretty much. Drake did. Jay-Z and Jay Electronica jump on that same song. And then Jay-Z responded. Here's what he said. Damn, ho, stun under my haters. Sorry, Mr. Drizzy, for so much y'all talk. Silly me rapping about shit that I really bought. Why these rappers rap about guns they ain't shot. And a bunch of other silly shit that they ain't got. I'm on my loop, peed up, young go. Stunning on stage after 12 years of slave. This ace of spade look like an Oscar. Black tux look like a mobster. Don't make me ride ya. Nigga, watch your tone. So yeah, he definitely called him Mrs. Drizzy. That definitely transpired. And so a lot of people were waiting on Drake to respond. Drake then comes back with a song called Draft Day. He came out with Draft Day last week, where he's shouting out Johnny Football and Andrew Wiggins on the record, but he quote unquote responded to Jay-Z on that song, and it really wasn't much of a response.
Already talking crazy, I was out of town. You know they love to pop all that shit when I'm not around, but when I'm here, not a sound. That'll make me snap, jot it down, go in the booth and lay a body down. I think I'm on my 8th flow, just watch me paint flow. We all do it for the art, so I can never hate though. Signing off on more deals than a lawyer with a heavy caseload. How the game turn into the Drake show? Dog, what the fuck happened to so-and-so? Where did they go? Too worried about bitches and fashion, they go missing in action. And then you never notice they missing.
So as you can see, I mean, it really wasn't much of a response. I mean, he kind of said, you know, we could beef, but, you know, never over the art, though, because we all love that, or something like that, to that effect. I thought he kind of may have been throwing a little subliminal shot when he was talking about rappers. They always rapping about bitches and fashion, and that kind of, you know, Jay-Z and Beyonce are like this. Not that he's calling Beyonce a bitch, but just talk as a more like Riley said, like Riley Freeman said, it's a general term for women, you know. So, but I think that's maybe how he meant it. And then talking about fashion, because Kanye's always talking about fashion. I thought maybe that's what that was, but it didn't really seem like anybody else got that same vibe. So, and even in the days leading up to Drake releasing Draft Day, a lot of people were saying, well, what is he going to say in response to this? Like, how is he going to respond? Because he can't, I mean, you know, you heard people like Charlamagne Tha God getting on the radio and say, what is he going to say about Jay-Z? Well, I mean, if I was Drake and I were trying to attack Jay-Z, I would have said something like, oh, you gone soft, or all you rap about is art and whatever. And, well, maybe Drake's not the right person to talk about somebody else being soft. But, you know, I would have said something, or I would have talked about how a lot of people felt like Magna Carta was weak, you know, because a lot of people did. And a lot of people feel like Jay fell off. I don't. I mean, I feel like Jay has made better work in the past than what he's made of late. But to say that Jay's whack or that he fell off or whatever, I don't think that's true. Because even his quote-unquote weak material is better than 90% of what's in the game now. So, but I mean, I think there was ways in which Drake could have planned an attack if he were going to go that route. And he didn't, really. I mean, it was a little subliminal jab, if that. It almost came off more apologetic than anything. And then that was it. And so I think more than anything, my takeaway was, I think Drake didn't want to burn that bridge, y'all. I think that what good is it going to do for him commercially? Or I mean, people love beef. So I don't want to make it sound like, you know, people don't benefit from beefs. But if you're Drake, I mean, would you rather beef with Jay-Z and run the risk of getting embarrassed by one of the greatest rappers of all time? High risk, high reward, true enough. I mean, if he wins that battle, then that's a pretty nice notation on his resume, right? But I mean, is it really worth it though? Because he's been working with Jay-Z for years. You know, they've done at least 3 songs together that I can remember. Two or three of them, two of them, I think, were really good, and one of them was terrible. The song they did together on Blueprint 3 was garbage. But they made the Pound Cake record last year, and that was a big one. Before that, they actually did the Light Up record that was off Drake's first album, Thank Me Later. So that was a hot one. You know, and I think Drake really does respect Jay-Z and what he's done for the game, and you know, his place in the craft. I've heard him say a lot of positive, very positive things about Jay-Z. I think he even said some positive things in that Rolling Stone interview about him. So I don't think that there was any real malice behind Drake's comment about the art thing. But, and so I think for that reason, even though Jay kind of came back at him pretty tough, I think Drake was kind of like, I don't really want this beef. I don't really want to go down this road. And it made me think, to an even larger point, I don't think Drake is a battle beef type of guy. I mean, we clown Drake all the time collectively for being sensitive and all that stuff, but that's who he is. He writes, you know, rap sonnets, and he sings on half his records, if not more, and he's kind of corny acting, but he's a brilliant musician and a great lyricist, and people love him for that. The beef thing, that's not really his lane. What's he gonna say? Is he gonna threaten to have Jay beat up, or is he gonna rhyme about him, you know, pulling a 9 out on Jay or whatever, or don't let me catch you in the street? I mean, what is he really gonna say? I mean, Drake's not tougher than Jay-Z. And it would be foolish for Drake to portray himself as if he's tougher than Jay-Z or something like that. And so, I mean, he could go at him on wax or whatever, but nobody would really take that seriously, I don't think. And I think it would just been bad for business for Drake, period, and would have been bad for his brand, because that's just not what he's built on. He's gone about it a different way. He didn't go the 50 Cent route. 50 Cent talks about everybody. 50 Cent doesn't even do anything. All he does is talk about people. He runs his mouth more than he actually makes music. But that's how he got on, was you know, trash talking other rappers and stuff like that. Drake's not that guy. What actually, it reminded me, I think a interesting comparison for Drake to me, Drake is Blake Griffin. Drake is a lot like Blake Griffin. He's a young guy that's relatively new in the game, but he's always putting up these Sports Center highlight dunks, you know what I'm saying? Drake is always dropping these Sports Center highlight 16s, and he's always showing out on as a guest on other people's records, and he's lighting up the charts, and he's, you know, rocking in the clubs and all this kind of stuff. He's cemented himself as one of the preeminent stars in the industry, just like Blake Griffin has, right? But when you watch Blake Griffin, and I've watched a lot of Blake Griffin, because, as you may have known, my favorite player to watch is Chris Paul. And so when Chris Paul went to the Clippers, I started watching a lot of Clippers games, and ergo, I watched a lot of Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin gets tested every single night. It's hilarious. They try this guy every night. Somebody tries to fight him. Somebody tries to scrap with him. Somebody, you know, they get tangled up, and then they're on the floor, then they're wrestling, whatever. And Blake is I don't know if he runs his mouth a lot on the court. He doesn't look like he does, and he seems like a pretty unassuming guy. You know, he's from Oklahoma. He's not really that, you know what I'm saying? He doesn't strike you as that type of dude that to just be jumping up in people's faces like he about to start something all the time. But yeah, he's always getting a technical foul. He's always getting tied up with somebody. He's got beef with Ibaka. He's got beef with Zach Randolph. It's always something involving Blake Griffin. About once a game, he gets into a skirmish with somebody on the other team. And it's really just because he's a physical player. And then people turn around and they call Blake Griffin soft. And I never understood that. What is Blake Griffin supposed to do? He always stands his ground as far as physically. He always continues to attack the basket, even when he gets cheap shotted in the face. He's not a fighter. So he has to literally go out and punch somebody in the face and get suspended for 5 to 10 games? That's what y'all want him to do? He's been smarter than that to this point in his career. He stays out of that. You know, he might pick up a tech here and there. He defends himself. I've never seen him back down from Zach Randolph. He doesn't stop going to the rack. He doesn't stop posting up. He doesn't stop rebounding or stop being physical. So, I mean, Blake just plays his game. He just keeps going to the basket looking to dunk on cats, even when he's getting, you know, in all this other mess. He avoids all that stuff, and he keeps his mind focused on the game. Nobody praises Blake Griffin for this. I never understood this, but this is what he does. He doesn't get teed up. He gets teed up, but he rarely gets kicked out of games. I mean, once in a while, but he doesn't. I think he got kicked out of a playoff game last year, I think, when it got knocked out. But you don't often see him get kicked out of games and stuff like that. That's not what he does. You know what I'm saying? He just plays his game, and he remains physical, even despite all the cheap shots and stuff that he's a recipient of. And I think that's what Drake is. He's Blake Griffin. He's trying to stay out the way. He's doing his best to stay out of harm's way and to not get kicked out of the rap game, so to speak. And obviously that would never happen. But what I mean is he's trying not to burn that bridge with Jay-Z. He's trying not to burn that bridge with Kendrick Lamar. We saw the same thing with that. Everybody said Drake needs to be the one to go at Kendrick. Drake said, you know what, I'm not really looking to work with Kendrick anymore after the Control verse last year. But he didn't directly go at Kendrick Lamar either. And some people thought maybe he was sending some subliminal shots on one of the songs off his last album, but that was never really confirmed, I don't think. And so the Kendrick Drake thing just kind of died. And I think this is what's going to happen with this Jay thing. It's just going to die out. And Drake is going to go back in the studio, and he's going to continue to make the hits. Just like Blake Griffin's going to go back to the court, and he's going to continue to dunk on people's heads. That's just what they do. And they're not looking for conflict. They work around the conflict as best they can, and they just continue to be monsters at what it is they do. Now, that's not good enough for some people. But my point is that I think that we need to just learn to accept it, because that's just who they are. What, you mad? That's not good enough for you? You mad that Drake didn't go at Jay-Z? But do like Jay-Z said, yo. Cry me a river, build a bridge, and get over it.
Hey, yo, come on home with us, man. Harlem World, USA, man. Take a walk with us on our block, man. See how we live. Dipset, yo, yo. Come on home with me. Early 90s, it wasn't pearly and shiny. I was certainly grimy. Cause I ain't have no fresh clothes. Or jewelry with the XOs. My house had its best those. I'm fixing up a 60 pack with a kitty cat. Mice running around the damn sticky trap. Come on home with me. Where my mother found my crack platter. Threw it away, so I snapped at her, back slapped her. She picked up a bat like Maguire, for that matter. Hit me, I was back at her. Come home where I ducked the DTs. Line around the corner, but I'm getting the free cheese. Come on home with me. Where I stand on my post, play on my toast. Dinner was mayonnaise and toast and pepper. Many nights I done slept with a heifer. Any beef came and left on a stretcher, killer. Come on home with me, where they rapidly flossing. Where I beg him to have the abortion. Money brand bag distortion. Caution ain't no track in the orbit. Relax in the coffin. And the bitch know I'm serious. Cause I'm never scared, ma, unless you miss your period. So come home with me, where the girls wanna come home with me. They say, Kim, if you need, don't hit me. Love to see the chrome whippy. The car a quarter mil on the wheels, I done blown 50. Dice game blown 50, Jones blown 60. Head crack stone swiftly, took it home with me. So come home with me, where a nigga makes Starbucks. I'm about to cop a Starbucks. I reversed all my hard luck. Now I'm at the dealer buying cars, yo, trucks, all yo, shucks.
Come home with me, to the streets, the slums, the ghetto, that's home to me. Every night my girl crying, come home to me. No, come home with me, where so many cops, the block is boiling. And the food is spoiled, but that pot with the rock is boiling. Same pot mama cooked with, left the oil in. Come on home with me, where these bitches is frauds. Niggas don't listen to broads. They have you sitting in court for kids that ain't yours. Come home with me, where every day the Glocks go pop. Where the front door's broken, the locks don't lock. Come home with me, dog, where the beef is seeking. Kids don't trick or treat, they get tricked for treating. Come home with me, where the pistol squeezing. Niggas twitch the cheekin', rip the pieces, our kids get even. Come home with me, don't leave your corners behind. Cause them bitches leave their monsters behind. Pray to God that I'm fine. Come on home with me, come on zone with me. Come on walk through this cold city, where these kids need food. Niggas need guidance and bitches need rules. Come on home with me, when niggas living off they last bucks. Phone is off, rent is backed up. Come home with me, niggas strap up. Hit the street, that's up. Clack up and get they money back up. Come home with me, every block got a crack in it. Every hallway got a nigga with some crack in it. Don't get trapped in it.
Come on home with me, when my parents would leave me alone. So early I was free to just roam. 7 keys to the home, 11 trees to the dome. 13 I ran the streets with the chrome. Come on home with me, where the buses don't run. And my dog straight buses they gun. Think that getting caught by justice is fun. Keep a blade up in their gums. This Harlem, where the fuck is you from? Come on home with me. Every few minutes was a knock at the door. Fiends coming, copping the roar. Clothes kick, socks on the floor. Mommy like be quiet, cause I really think them cops at the door. Is them locks on the door? Come on home with me. With grandmothers is 30. One grandma that bought it is 30. 4 grand is my cut from a birdie. School cutting it early. Don't stutter, motherfuckers, you heard me. Come on home with me. These are the facts. Steve Francis say Latifah got jacked. Mike Tyson punched Miss Green in the face. Sarge snatched by the feds. We was the case. Well, shit, he's still pleading his case. Come home with me. Hoes say that's Jones with you. What I wouldn't take him home with you. Come home with me. Get stoned with me. Be zoned with me. The chrome you see. The Jones you see. Dipset. Come home with me. Dipset, nigga. Jim Jones. Copple status. Killer. Freaky Ziggy. Joel Santana.
I wanted to do something a little bit different on the podcast this evening. I felt like we should start profiling some different artists here. And one of the things, I don't know how often we're going to do this. This is the first time. So we might not do this, you know, often. We might just do this once every couple of podcasts, or might just do it whenever my interest gets piqued. I don't know yet. But I wanted to drop a new segment called Ear to the Streets. And because we're always trying to keep our ear to the streets, we're always checking out new music, we're always trying to trying to find something that, that maybe other people aren't up on at the moment, or we feel like maybe more people should be up on. So I'm going to do a new segment called Ear to the Streets, y'all. It's basically, I'm going to take a quick moment to profile somebody that's new, or not, maybe not even necessarily somebody that's new. It could be somebody that's established, but it may be somebody that just, you know, their music hasn't been recognized, or somebody that is flying under the radar, and I just feel like people need to know who this person is. The first edition of this segment, I wanted to profile King Los. King Los is a rapper from Baltimore, and he was actually pretty new to me. I had never really heard of him, to be honest with you, until he dropped his control verse response to Kendrick Lamar last year. And there was a lot of people that came at, you know, that came after Kendrick and dropped their little control verses. You know, some people like Joel Ortiz had a hot one, I remember. And there were some other people that tried and failed, like Fred the Godson, I think. He's trash. But King Los, he actually stepped up, and his response to the control verse was off the chain. You don't believe me? Check this out.
Yeah, I'm a king, I'm elite. I could never dream of defeat. I could doctor king you with speech while I'm Rodney King in your beat. You playing the victim, nigga. I'm saying the vicious scriptures. You niggas is in denial like you bathing Egyptian rivers. I wrote this in hieroglyphics. I'm focused and I am gifted. I hope that I just provoked you to notice that I am different. I feel so blessed I should mention. I push the depths of extension much higher. My type of talent requires special attention.
Exactly. So, yeah, the kid can spit. And even then, I hadn't actually heard any of his work, but he just came out with a new mixtape just about a week ago, or I take that back. It was a couple weeks ago, but and he's been on the scene for a minute. He's got quite a few mixtapes under his belt, so I don't want to make it. You know, I'm late. You know what I'm saying? So forgive me on this one, but it was entitled Zero Gravity 2, and Zero Gravity 2. He definitely did his thing on this mixtape. He raps a fair amount about trapping and stuff like that, which if you see King Los, he don't really look like a trapping kind of a trap rapper, you know what I'm saying? He don't look like a trapping cat, but nevertheless, he raps quite a bit about that, and I really enjoyed the Woke Up Like This record. That kind of had like a little bounce to it that, you know, you could really, at nighttime, if you're in the whip with your boys, you could really get amped to that record, possibly, you know what I'm saying? It had that kind of feel to it, and he definitely had some heat on his mixtape Zero Gravity 2. He actually redid Pound Cake, and I was really impressed with his lyrical dexterity on that record.
To recognize the genius I am, you had to have one foot on Venus to even visit these arenas I'm in. Now did I say arenas or serenas? I kill shit, Venus, serenas. I kill shit, I Gilbert, arenas. I'm ill with the skill with, if it, the skill with. If this the shit that I build with, I'm building a building built with a billion builders that's building a building on top of this one. No feeling is topping this one, no villain is stopping this one. That'd be a dark night, won't it? While overlooking my city, had a dark night moment. I'm overlooking my city, same city that overlooked me. Now it's back to back tours, cause cities just overbooked me. I'm the future. Tell these niggas I need my proper spot. They a bunch of Papa Docs and chocolate drops.
And I mean, and the whole mixtape, y'all, is just like that. I mean, he doesn't have a ton of features. He pretty much carries it himself, and that's kind of the way you got to do it. Nobody wants to hear a mixtape that's exclusively filled with features up to the brim, and every track has three features on it. His wasn't like that. I mean, he definitely had some features on there, but not enough to overshadow him, and that didn't happen. And so it was a very impressive mixtape, I thought, from a lyrical standpoint. So, and not everybody does the wordplay lyrical thing, you know, flip the tongue and all that. Some people get down with that. Other people don't look for that. Some people just don't want to think that hard when they listen to rap music, you know? Some people just want to sit back and enjoy the rhythm, and they don't want to try to catch what somebody said. They don't like pressing rewind and stuff. Personally, I love pressing rewind. I love just listening to it, just nodding my head. What? What did he say? And then I'm reaching for the rewind button, and I gotta take it back 10 to 15 seconds to catch what he said. I love when I'm listening to a song for the 10th time, or for the 20th, or the 50th time even, and I catch something new that I didn't catch the first 49 times. That's dope to me. And so King Los is the type of cat that you could find yourself doing that with. So if you really love lyricism at its fullest, I think you'll enjoy Zero Gravity too. And if you're not familiar with King Los at all, you can also go online and check out his freestyles with Sway on Sway in the Morning, his radio show. He actually killed it. He killed the Five Fingers of Death. And most of it, I mean, I think some of it was written, I think, the first time he went in the booth with Sway, I think. The Five Fingers, that looked to be all off the dome, and it was dope. He was definitely spitting hot fire, as the kids say. So yeah, that's just a little quick news segment. Ear to the Streets, King Lo's Zero Gravity mixtape. Excuse me, Zero Gravity 2. Zero Gravity 2 is the new mixtape. Go check that out, y'all. One last thing I wanted to get into tonight was the situation involving DeSean Jackson. He is a wide receiver of the Washington Redskins. Previously, he was a wide receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles cut DeSean about a week or two ago, and there was a lot of controversy around that. He ended up going to division rival Washington, and he signed a contract with them, and now he's going to be seeing Philly two times a year. Now, the reason there was some controversy around that, because players get cut in the NFL every day, so why was this one different? Well, I'll tell you why this one was different. DeSean Jackson just came off the best year of his career. In fact, I believe he put up career numbers in about every major receiving statistical category there is. And it was hard to believe that he was going to get cut considering the season he had just had. And he had 82 catches for, thank you for bearing with me as I pulled it up on the computer. I did my best to try to hide the fact that I was typing while I was talking, so hopefully y'all didn't hear that. But if you did, oh well, deal with it. DeSean Jackson had 82 catches last year for 1,332 yards and 9 touchdowns. He was by far the best receiver on the team in Philadelphia. And Chip Kelly, the head coach and the general management staff, they just let him go. Now, the same day that DeSean Jackson got cut by Philly, there was a report that I think was on NewJersey.com, NJ.com, that came out suggesting that DeSean had some gang affiliations. Gang affiliations was the buzzword of the week. And again, most of you guys, if you listen to this podcast, you probably already heard all about this, but there were some gang ties, allegedly, that may have scared the Eagles, and that may have been a reason why they let him go. Now, there was some confusion because the website that published the story initially, their initial, the way they entitled the article implied that the Eagles knew about these quote-unquote gang affiliations, and that played into the reason why they let him go. Then, after the fact, the article was changed around, and then it came out that, well, they tried to frame it as so the information that they were publishing was independent of any knowledge that Philly already had about it. So they made it sound like Philly knew nothing about these gang ties, and they just made this decision on their own, and then the gang ties stuff came out afterwards, and the reporting had no impact on the Eagles' decision to let him go. So there was some confusion there, and then Richard Sherman, we should remember Richard Sherman from this past year's Super Bowl, the loudmouth corner of the Seattle Seahawks, Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks, an all-pro corner. Richard Sherman, he's a Stanford grad, so people respect his intelligence, and because that's what going to Stanford gets you, I guess. But Richard Sherman writes for the Monday Morning Quarterback, which is a football website, and he does some independent blogging on there, and he recently wrote a story or a blog post about how he thought it was interesting. Well, basically, the gist of the article was about not forgetting where you're from, and that DeSean Jackson just can't magically wake up and forget where he's from, and therefore ignore all the people that were in his life before he ever made it to the NFL. And they actually grew up together. Sherman and Jackson grew up together in Watts, I believe. And so they were boys going back quite a few years. And so he kind of came to DeSean's defense. That was what the primary part of the article was. But there was one part at the end where Sherman called into question a double standard that may exist. He said that we all remember Riley Cooper, who was also a wide receiver of the Philadelphia Eagles last year. Riley Cooper used the N-word in a derogatory context, an extremely derogatory context, and when he was at a Kenny Chesney concert, and he had been drinking a little bit allegedly, and he fired up an N-bomb, and he basically said something. I don't even know what it was about, but he basically said, "I will fight every nigger here." That's exactly what he said, and that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, understandably so, myself included. That was, you know, as an African American, that was off-putting to hear somebody talk like that in any context. And so, and as a result, Riley Cooper was not suspended. I don't even know if he was disciplined. I think he was sent to counseling. I think that was it. He got which is in essence a slap on the wrist. He got sent to counseling, and he didn't miss any game time, I don't believe. And as it turned out, that due to another injury on the roster to Jeremy Maclin, Riley Cooper got thrust into a starting role for Philly last year and had the best season of his career. In the offseason, and let me just point this out too, Riley Cooper was very empathetic, and he was very sincere in his apology, it appeared. And he went on television and talked about how wrong he was for saying what he said. He has a locker room full of black teammates, most of whom seem to come to his defense and not hold any grudges with him after that episode, including Michael Vick, who was the quarterback, the starting quarterback at the time. And so Riley seemed to kind of escape that situation more or less without a ton of damage to his reputation or at least to his professional life. And he actually had a great year this year and was rewarded with a brand new contract this offseason. So he got like a $25 million deal with, I believe, $8 million guaranteed. And so Richard Sherman looks at that and says, okay, wait a minute. This guy just says he wants to fight a bunch of niggers, is literally what he said. And now he's getting a brand new contract? But DeSean Jackson, who is quote-unquote gang-affiliated, he gets released. What up with that? And then Richard Sherman went on to call into the effect the double standard of Jim Irsay, the Colts owner, who it was like straight out of a movie, yo. Jim Irsay gets pulled over. He's drunk. He's high. I think he's got all kinds of pills and stuff, prescription pills in his car, and a bag of cash. Like, this is literally some Breaking Bad type stuff with Jim Irsay. And he's going to counseling, and some people, Richard Sherman was saying that some of the media people were saying, well, this man needs help. This man, Richard Sherman was saying, this man, Jim Irsay, just needs some help. But it doesn't seem to be the same judgment people are using, whether they be media members or organizational members. It doesn't seem to apply with Jim Irsay or Riley Cooper in the same fashion that it was applied to DeSean Jackson, because people just assumed that he had gang affiliations, and that was a part of the reason, at least, why maybe Philly let him go. They talked about this on ProFootballTalk.com, which is a website that is pretty in the know as far as all things that are happening in the NFL. And there was an article about there. And if you go to Pro Football Talk right now, they have on the right hand side, they'll have a little blurb about the most commented on articles on the website. And the most commented on article on the website of late is this article about Richard Sherman's response to the DeSean Jackson situation. And I read through the comments section, which is always a dangerous proposition when you start reading through comment sections on the internet. I understand this, y'all. But I went ahead and did it anyway. I could not believe, I was shocked that so many people came to Riley Cooper's defense and buried DeSean Jackson, some of which were buried him off of the fact that he had these quote-unquote gang ties. And they took it as true. They took it as fact. Like, well, somebody even said, I'd rather have a bigot on my team than play with somebody who's affiliated with gangs. And it's like, okay. And if you look at you can thumb up and thumbs down a column or a comment rather. And there were everything that was pro Riley Cooper had a thumbs up. Everything that was pro Richard Sherman or DeSean Jackson was a thumbs down. I just couldn't believe it was that one sided. And so it got me thinking. I just wanted to say a few things about that. First of all, I can imagine that it's difficult being white in America in this way, being a young white person, especially in America in this way, because a lot of young white people are very good people. A lot of them are very liberal and very understanding of the struggle of other cultures. And a lot of them are culturally competent and all of that. But when they hear non-whites or other minorities talk about them, specifically white men, because they're the ones that are in perceived power, it's all negative. It's all, you know, what you did, you people, you're the man, and what you people did so many years ago and all this other stuff. And it usually involves stuff that people they may or may not have been related to that were doing stuff 150 years ago, 200 years ago. And so if you're, you know, a 20-year-old white kid, you have to sit there and listen to that, and you're like, you know, I'm tired of people talking about how bad I am or how bad my ancestors are when I myself am a good person and my family are good people and we're not racist. So I can understand how that might rub people the wrong way. And I think, even though that's understandable, I think the danger of that is a lot of times people will then take that and then say everything that a black person or a minority says that calls race into question is all of a sudden reverse racism. And there was a lot of comments on that story of people accusing Richard Sherman of being racist. And I thought that was out of line. Richard Sherman didn't do anything in that Monday morning quarterback column outside of calling attention to something that looked to be like an inconsistency with Eagles management. That's really all he did. He never called them racist. He never said, he basically said that some of these things may have been lost on the Philadelphia Eagles. The fact that they handled one situation one way and another situation another way, that seemed a bit odd. And that's more or less what he said. Now there were some other comments in that same comment section where people said, well, this is the Eagles team that took a chance on Michael Vick, and they've taken chances on several other black quarterbacks in the past, like McNabb and Cunningham. And, you know, to suggest that they're in any way racist or anything like that is just way off base. And I thought that was a good point, because the Eagles management has done that. But I think what I'm afraid of is I'm afraid of an America where if you're a minority, you cannot call something to attention without being accused of reverse racism and people just losing sight of the issue. And I didn't think that what the Eagles did by giving Riley Cooper a slap on the wrist and a new contract and giving DeSean Jackson the heave-ho, I didn't think that was racist. I didn't think that the Eagles management was racist by doing that. I don't believe that. And a lot of people pointed out that it was a contractual situation with DeSean Jackson, and that's why they let him go, which I don't really buy that, because they just signed Darren Sproles, and they gave Riley Cooper some money, too. So they had enough money to sign DeSean Jackson. They just chose not to. And DeSean didn't even take a monster deal with the Redskins. The deal that he got was comparable to the deal that Eric Decker got from the Jets. It was cheaper than the one that Eric Decker got from the Jets. So DeSean Jackson's numbers are comparable to Mike Wallace's when he was in Pittsburgh, and Mike Wallace got a monster deal last year. So DeSean could have gotten way more based on that, but he actually didn't get a ton of money. So I don't think money was as big of an issue as some of the people that were commenting made it seem. But what I don't want to have happen is people to be at a point where you can't bring up something that appears to be a little suspicious, and then all of a sudden you're getting labeled a racist, and then you're getting beat over the head the way Richard Sherman was. I didn't feel like that was very fair to him. And as far as DeSean Jackson goes, you know what? Let me tell you something, y'all. I'm a young black male. I grew up in the suburbs. You know, I'm not no punk, you know what I'm saying? But I'm not hard. You know, I didn't have a hard life growing up like a lot of people had, like, you know, a lot of people that you might think of when you think of a young black man in the NFL and things like that. When you think of those kinds of people, you think of these guys that had these rough upbringings, and they came out the hood and they came in single parent homes and stuff like that. I didn't grow up like that. I grew up in a two family home in the suburbs. We were middle class, you know, hardworking people, and that's pretty much how a lot of my friends grew up too. I mean, a lot of them grew up in single parent homes, but their parents did pretty well for themselves. We went to the same schools, and we had decent lives. You know, we weren't dealt the same hand that a lot of people are dealt with when they're coming up in the, you know, when they're coming up in the hood. But when you're black in America, you are not far from any of the problems that affect the entire black community. And I think that's something that a lot of people didn't understand, because those people that didn't understand DeSean Jackson's quote unquote gang ties, and DeSean cleared the air. He basically came out and said, I'm not a gang member. And even though there was like pictures of him allegedly throwing up gang signs and stuff like that, he came out and said, I am not a gang member. I know people that are in gangs, but that's not how I roll. I've never been that way. Mind you, DeSean Jackson's never been arrested. He's never gotten into any real off the field problems in the NFL. The only incidents he's had was supposedly he was unprofessional and he was late to meetings and stuff like that, which may have affected, you know, the coach's perceived ability to coach him or to control him. And it didn't fly with the locker room. And so maybe that played into him getting cut. And if that's the case, then I'm okay with that, because, yeah, you should be held to professional standard. But to say that DeSean Jackson should have been let go for some reason because of these gang ties, I don't buy that, because again, here I am growing up in the suburbs. I'm a young guy, but didn't have that type of lifestyle coming up. I didn't play with guns. I didn't sell dope, none of that stuff. But guess what? I know people that did. I know people that sold dope. I know people that carried guns. I know people that shot people. I know people that have been to prison. You know, I know people that have dealt with drug problems, crack problems, stuff like that in my family. These are things that if you're black in America, you're just one step away from this stuff. Like, maybe you didn't grow up that way, but you know people that did. You know people in the hood. You got family there. You have friends there, people that you love and that you care about, people that you share the same values with, and you share the same vision, and you have the same dreams and goals. But they just came from rougher backgrounds and different type of communities that you grew up in. And, you know, if you're black in America, you know what? Maybe you didn't grow up that way, but chances are you, like I said, you dealt with people that have. I'm not the hardest one, man, but like I said, I know people that have done those things and that have lived that lifestyle and that have worked to get out of that lifestyle, and sometimes maybe have gotten sucked back in. So I think that's where maybe the disconnect lied with the people that were commenting on this article that thought that the Eagles were justified in cutting DeSean Jackson because of his quote unquote gang affiliations. I'm not affiliated with any gangs. You know what I'm saying? I'm a law-abiding citizen. I've never been in a gang in my life, but I'm affiliated with people that are familiar with that lifestyle, but that's not a necessarily reflection on me. And so I think that people just need to try to understand each other's side. I think we need to understand a little bit of what some of the good white people that are out there understand, and there's a lot of them, understand where they're coming from a little bit. And I think in turn, on the other hand, I think that a lot of times white America needs to understand what it's like to be black in America, or just put yourself in our shoes, because even if we're not a part of those situations, we're not far removed from those situations yet either. And so, you know, we're all in a family still, as far as that's concerned. And that's something I wanted to get off my chest, y'all. But we are about out of time. So thank you very much again. It's another edition of the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Hope I wasn't too heavy there at the end, but we're going to be back at it pretty soon. We got the NBA playoffs coming up, and we still got a lot of music to talk about, as always, in the world of hip hop. So get at us on the website at hiphopsportsreport.com, on Twitter at HHSReport, and again on iTunes. Please rate, subscribe first, and then rate and comment, and let me know if you like what you're hearing. And if you don't like what you're hearing, save that noise and tell me what you did like anyways, and then comment on that. You know what I'm saying? I just need to hear nothing but positive right now. We're trying to build this thing. So thank you very much for tuning in, y'all. Talk to you later. Peace.
Every day I wake up to the same shit, in the same house, with the same bricks, in the same clothes, with the same kicks. I might as well be in jail, caged in, stepping at the wall waiting for a change. But dad telling me I gotta get a job, couldn't pay the bills, so the lights turned off. Them Cleveland boys got it hard. Oh my God, we've been living like this too long, just to lose it all in the week. My people too strong, get it? Me and my boys be blowing, puffing all weed like this too long. Me and my boys tired of being here, that is why we gone. They said we wouldn't amount to nothing. Y'all thought we was bluffing, huh? Thought every temptation shit, I guess I'm David Ruffin, huh? Nowadays we don't gotta do that dirt. Tell my boys they good. And nowadays my little girl won't have to work. Move her out the hood. Look, man, I done been through it all. And I will be damned if I got this far. And I let them strip me of this message. Let these haters take my heart. This for the ones that had it hard. The ones like me, the underdog. This for the ones that waited for them clouds to fall. Please, God, let it. You can't see my tears in the.
see my tears in the underneath it all, we just the same, 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 same. You can't see my tears in the all around the world, it's just the same, same, same. You can't see my tears in the no, so I let it rain. And they mad that I made it out the city. What? But if you look, I'm still out in the city. Before everything, I had clout in the city. Yeah. Two of the states, I never bounced in the city. No. Shout out to everybody that's proud in the city. Hey. Everybody cheering in the crowd from the city. Hey. Everyone that never had doubts in the city. Cause they know I represent what we about in the city. Woo. And I'm still laced up. Tell the world ain't nothing's changed. Till it's $100 bills in my pockets and nothing's changed. If my team ain't with me, then I don't want a thing. Tell them I'll go broke before I run out on my gang. EST over everything. 100,000 plus. Cold fan base, yeah. Us. My songs tattooed on their body. Troubled you, we bad as fuck. And what? Nobody gave a shit for broken mirrors. So I care less about appearance, just as long as they can hear us. We're fearless, we're stupid, we're dealers. We're losers, we're killers. We're orphans, we're addicts, we're stealers. We're shooters, so kill us. We are what they say we are until conformity hits us. Or those clouds come down and take them all with us. Please, God, lady. You can't see my tears in the see my tears in the underneath it all, we just the same, same, same. You can't see my tears in the all around the world, it's just the same, same, same. You can't see my tears in the no, so I let it rain. We just the same, same, same. You can't see my tears in the all around the world, it's just the same, same, same. You can't see my tears in the